live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, the latest on health and healing, always at the cutting edge. For example, heart attacks without heart disease. Oh, yeah, this is brand new. Comes from the U.S. National Center for Health Statistics, and where there's no known cause for having a heart attack, yet they have it. Well, we figured out why they're having it. We'll share that with you. Give your psychiatrist a diagnosis of their own. How about I'll give you six disorders that you can choose to give any one of them to your psychiatrist? The FDA is under court order. There's a major victory in the case of pomegranate juice about making legitimate claims, and yet the FDA refuses to allow truthful claims based upon good science. Well, what does that mean? Well, it means we've got a very corrupt FDA. And John Rappaport has an article today called "The FDA is a Rogue Criminal Agency." I agree with that, and we'll tell you why. Also, today, I'm going to share some insights into our educational system and what I believe is the co-opting of the system by for-profit groups that really don't care whether or not the young people today are educated in the way they need to be, but rather there's $1 trillion each year they can make off the process. I'll also tell you why I believe that some people should not go to college, that it would be the worst thing they could do. And which ones should go to college? Who should go to college and why? I'll explain what I believe are the single most important areas of college education and prerequisites, but also I'm going to play you something today that you've never heard. And this is why those of you who have advanced degrees and a great deal of seniority and experience, you specifically are being targeted by major corporations to get rid of you, to bring inexpensive labor in from other countries, South Korea, India, as examples. And they'll deny this? Well, we've got the audio tape of a major session packed in a grand ballroom where a law firm representing these people in special visas are laying out what they intend to do and why. And that's why 8 million Americans who've worked hard, got their educations, were out there working, are now unemployed. Their jobs were taken by 8.4 million people who came in under this special provision that allows them to work in the United States, but not at the same wages as the people who were there more profit, the companies. From the environmental area today, remember about 7 months ago I said be very aware that the Arctic is melting, and as a result that's releasing methane in amounts never before released, and that will have consequences because that methane, which has been trapped by the ice, goes out into the atmosphere when the ice melts. That causes increased global warming, the greenhouse gas. So I'll talk about that in the latest findings. My newsmaker, which is a shorter interview today, will come right after Health and Nutrition, is Greg Palast. And I'd like Greg's input on why the major media is not talking about the important issues in a way that informs, but rather is acting more like a propaganda medium for special ideologies. So as you see, we have a lot to share. Let's begin. Something strange and ominous, according to Wake Up World, is happening to young people, especially young women. Now, historically, they're supposed to be safe. But what the latest research is showing is that young women are dying of sudden heart attacks, what is called an acute myocardial infarction, without any of the classical symptoms of heart disease or chest pain or blocked arteries. They die quickly, as though struck by lightning. Every year since accounting began, there have been a tiny number of persons in the United States who died abruptly for no apparent reason. In fact, the annual list of death statistics issued by the U.S. National Center for Health Statistics, including unknown causes, a category along with heart disease, cancer, stroke, and so on, until about 10 years ago. It was about that time that started to look at how many people were dying, and no one knew why. Well, federal biostatisticians go to considerable lengths to determine a cause of every death on the United States soil. People are simply not allowed to die without a good reason, it would seem. And yet, despite their best efforts, there was a rising number of deaths that no one could account for. Seems though they have now, the National Center for Health Statistics, have solved the problem, and now everyone who dies can be placed in an acceptable category. And since each death involves a heart that stops beating, deaths for unknown reasons have become deaths from heart attacks. A recent article in the Journal of the American Medical Association sounded an alarm and made the evening news. Increases in the number of heart attack deaths between 1996 and 2004 occurring in young, healthy, symptom-free women has shocked the medical community. Deaths from unknown causes remain and now happen often enough to have the attention of physicians. In the dry but riveting language of a medical journal, here's what it says, quote, "The risk among young women relative to men is not explained by differences in MI severity, comorbidity, or treatment. The reasons for this age-dependent disparity in mortality for younger women are not clear," end quote. Let me just tell you what that means in lay language. We haven't a clue what's going on. The statistics include only those who die of sudden heart attacks in the hospital. That means an abrupt cardiac failure. But what if you have a heart attack at home or at work or in a park or while riding a bike outside the hospital? We have no way of knowing how many of those people die that way. So right now what we're seeing is a lot of young women dying. And, for example, last year we had 9,000 of them die, according to an article in Internal Medicine, and no one happens to know why. Let me venture a few reasons why. First, because today we have more young women in our society than ever in our history binge drinking, especially in college. It used to be men did the binge drinking. Now women are binge drinking. And understand what it means to binge drink. You could drink 8, 10, 12 heavy shots of whiskey. You could drink 20 beers. You drink until you vomit. With every one of those, there's a massive assault upon the heart tissue, the liver, the kidneys. All the systems are getting just battered. And then one day you don't binge drink, but you're still social drinking. But you're only 24. Your body is closer to 60 biochemically, biologically. That means because of the oxidative stress and the free radicals you produce, it just tears to pieces your DNA. But the trouble is, on the other side of that, you're not doing all you can to repair the DNA. Generally, the two minds are not the same. For example, the mind that doesn't matter how much food they eat, what they eat, as long as it tastes good and it's salty and crunchy, they're going to eat all they can. As long as it's inexpensive, they get all they can eat, they're going to eat all they can. And they're going to drink unhealthy. So when they end up dying or getting sick, it's almost never someone who's been very aware of health choices, and in spite of all the choices they made, still ended up getting sick. That's rare. So we haven't been paying attention to what has become the new norms. Living with a cell phone to the side of our head. Living our life with our face pressed clear up within 12 inches, 24 inches of a computer, which is throwing out a constant electromagnetic stream. Sleeping too few hours, which throws off our circadian rhythms and turns down the amount of melatonin secreted to protect our immune system from the pineal gland. Getting up in the morning and having no real energy because we've exhausted it, and then drinking caffeine to artificially stimulate, like a jump cable on a dead battery, our adrenal glands. Living in an environment where we really don't pay attention to environmental stressors or pollutants, and being very cavalier about what we put into our system, as long as it doesn't make us too fat. You add all that together, and what you have in a 35-year-old woman is what it would have taken 80 years, 100 years ago, to have done as far as damage. So we're simply accelerating the pace at which someone, in the variety of ways, someone can hurt themselves. So when they do have their heart attack or stroke or liver failure or kidney failure or some combination, and if they're not in a hospital, and most people are not, then they'll just all be lumped under one category. There won't be any further inspection because at some point, we don't want to take a really careful look at what's hurting us. Now, we do know that myocardial infarctions in women are up, way up. So that's a major, major reason, because women are having heart attacks. But why? A healthy heart doesn't just have an attack. It doesn't run out of oxygen. It doesn't run out of blood. Then you're starting with the idea that we all have healthy hearts until we get older, until women get postmenopausal, and then they're not able to hormonally protect their heart, and that's why they have a higher incidence of heart attacks later in life, when the inflammatory markers for heart disease like homocysteine and fibrinogen and C-reactive protein go up. Not true. Women are doing so many unhealthy things so young in life, including drugs, and then you just start destroying your internal organs. I would think at the very least that the President of the United States and the Vice President could start by doing something constructive. How about stop eating junk food every chance you have in public to kind of show that you're just like, you know, the regular person, and maybe even take in something healthy occasionally and talk about it. But we don't do that. And how about having a Surgeon General that actually starts to put out some PSAs, extensive PSAs, just showing, here's what happens to the body when you have a glass of wine, a low glass alcohol glass of wine, a higher alcohol, then having soft drinks, and here's what happens with the fructose in your body, here's what happened with the aspartame in your body, here's what happened with the higher alcohol in your body, here's what happens when you binge drink in the body, and just start showing these. But show them as real Hollywood-quality animations. And don't put any message with it. You know, don't moralize it. Just say, this is just a public service announcement for those of you who want to use your freedom of choice, which you have a right to do, take anything into your body. Since the manufacturers of these products are not going to show you what the effects are, we thought we would. Here are the effects and the side effects of everything that you eat and drink that's common and popular. End of story. I think an awful lot of people, after seeing this, would start to have second thoughts about continuing it. And if they do see it and still say, well, the heck with it, I'm going to do it, well, then, you know, there's a high probability that person's not going to be living a long life in any case, because they're going to be defiant about anything that could actually be in their well-being. But at least they will have had that opportunity. Right now, a lot of people have no idea that the damage you do when you're 16, 15, 14, 12, that's the damage that becomes the foundation for the rest of your life. And we're not telling people this. We're not telling young people who are taking Ritalin and Paxil and Prozac. You're going to die young. You're not going to live a long life. And along the way, you're far more likely to have a heart attack, a sudden heart attack. Oh, do you want to see all the kids who've had a heart attack after taking Ritalin? Here they are. So is this really something you want to be taking or taking for a long period of time? At the very least, I believe that we have a moral responsibility. Forget the science. Forget the ethics. There is none left in American medicine. It just doesn't exist, with those exceptional individuals who are practicing it. But as a whole, the institutions no longer are standing up for the real healing that is capable. Instead, they're standing up for the pharmaceutical interest in the for-profit hospital and for-profit insurance industry. They are very loyal, but not to you. So this is just the latest on that, and I thought it was important. Also, as you know, we are helping, as part of a large group of individuals, thousands of different grassroots groups, some groups with just one person out of their home on a telephone, others standing in outside of a Walmart handing out flyers that they printed themselves. But that's where I believe that all the major battles have to be. I don't believe, I will not trust, I will not work with any of the major organizations, because they have all been co-opted. I've said it. I said it to their face. I said it to the UN, to them. You ought to watch that. It's one of those really strong lectures that someone had to say, and no one had. and I decided to put them on notice. You take money from a big polluter, and then you don't talk about that anymore. It's no longer in any of your messages to your hundreds of thousands of members. And they gave you $26 million. What'd you do with the $26 million? Oh, I see. You made sure that there was no more discussion of hydrofracking being bad. But you got the money from the gas hydrofracking companies. Let me see, $26 million from the companies who want to hydrofrack. You're against hydrofracking. Now you get the $26 million. You're no longer against hydrofracking. I wonder if that in any way influenced. I wonder if there was any possibility that your $600,000 year salary and your all-expense-paid black your black American Express card, which is gives you unlimited amounts of purchases, and all those other perks, did that in any way influence that judgment? Well, yes, it does, and we all know that. So the grassroots is where all major movements today must begin, and they're gaining enormous strength. So we, the larger we, of all the people who are engaged in stopping genetic engineering, we're starting at the basics. Let people know that what they're eating is genetically engineered. Then let them know at the same time, here's what you're eating and here's why you should be concerned. Your government's not going to tell you this. They've been co-opted. And we've got it on the ballot in November in California. We're trying to get it through a governor in Connecticut who has sided with the and the legislature who sided with the GMO companies, the Monsantos, and we're trying in other states. Because I know when the public sees they have a choice of having labeled GMO or not, they'll take labeled and then they won't buy it. This is from Jack Adam Weber from Wake Up World. Time for a little GMO update. Monsanto and friends, this message is for you. New research demonstrates what most of us have suspected for years. GMOs and the poisons used on them are bad for everything on the planet. For ethical reasons, as well as the obstruction of research by Monsanto, little comprehensive GMO research has been done on humans. But finally, we are beginning to see more hard evidence showing the dangerous effects of GMO industry. A little over a year ago, the journal Reproductive Toxicology published the results of a study done in Quebec, Canada. It showed the BT toxin, the pesticide now routinely genetically engineered into GE, genetically engineered corn and cotton, was found in the blood of pregnant women and in their fetuses, as well as in the non-pregnant women. This same study also discovered that glyphosate, the active ingredient in Roundup, was found in the blood of non-pregnant women. That is not good news. Until recently, the Quebec study had been one of the few pieces of sound scientific evidence demonstrating the absorption of BT toxin into the blood of humans, an occurrence Monsanto reportedly claimed would not occur when they proposed their nasty little intervention for approval some years ago. Are we surprised that they were proven wrong? Not at all. Does this stop them? Not in the least. So, a brand new scientific study now shows the BT toxin, known as Cry1AB toxin, kills human embryonic kidney cells. If you think this is alarming, there is more. The study also shows that combining BT toxin, Cry1AB and Cry1AC with Roundup, as is now commonly done on GMO crops, can delay apoptosis, which can promote cancer. Now, programmed cell death, by the way, is the normal and natural death of cells that occur as a routine controlled part of an organism's growth or development. This study also found that glyphosate, the active ingredient in Roundup, on its own causes necrosis, the death of tissue, in amounts lower than that used in agriculture. So, we should let the FDA know that we are opposed to genetic engineering. Let your state legislators know you're opposed to it. Let the federal legislators know you're opposed to it. That's very important. And finally, growing body of evidence is showing that massage therapy can be effective for a variety of prevalent health conditions, including the pain of osteoarthritis of the knee, inflammation after exercise, chronic low back pain, and fibromyalgia. Massage is rapidly becoming recognized as an important part of health and wellness, and research compiled by the American Massage Therapy Association indicates some of what takes place in the body during massage. And then it goes through what they've actually found by taking blood chemistries and turning off a lot of the pro-inflammatory activity and reducing inflammation throughout the body. So that's good. So one more reason why good quality massage makes a difference. I'm Gary Knoll, and we're here to talk about the issues that don't get the attention they deserve. By the way, nearly a quarter of teens in the United States have diabetes. This is the first time this amount has ever happened in American history. This is just published in Pediatrics, and so that's a whole lot of teens with diabetes or prediabetes. That means that they're going to live shorter lives by at least 8 years, more susceptible to heart disease, cancer, stroke, and being overweight. So, and also, this is the first generation in American history where a lot of these young teens will not outlive their parents. From the environmental segment of our program, Arctic ice. Remember, it was, well, first it was a year ago, and then it was about a half a year. I talked about, pay attention to what's happening in the Arctic because it will impact our climate. Here's the latest from the BBC News and Science and Environmental section from Richard Black, their correspondent. Quote, scientists have identified thousands of sites in the Arctic where methane has been stored for many millennia, is bubbling into the atmosphere. The methane has been trapped by ice, but is able to escape as the ice melts. Writing in the journal Nature Geoscience, the researchers say this ancient gas could have a significant impact on climate change. Methane is the second most important greenhouse gas after CO2, and levels are rising after a few years of stability. There are many sources of gas around the world, some natural, some man-made, such as landfill waste, disposal sites, and animal farms. Tracking methane to these various sources is not easy, but the researchers on the new Arctic project, led by a Dr. Anthony, the University of Alaska, Fairbanks, were able to identify long-stored gas by the ratio of different isotopes of carbon in the methane molecule. Now, what this means is that that they have about 150,000 places between Alaska and Greenland that used to be covered by ice that are not now, and this methane's releasing. Now, I had one more qualifying issue on here. All across the tundra in Russia, a gigantic landmass, you could put three United States in that area, it used to be constant permafrost. Now it's not. Global warming has melted it. Methane is coming up from there as well. So we're having more methane. Now, what can we do? Well, there's nothing we can do about that. But there is something we can do to help trap some of the methane, lessen it, and that is by one day a week going meatless, just one day a week. And then, after a month, go 2 days a week. And then after a month, 3 days a week. Start gradually so you get used to alternative ways of getting off meat and what the options are. Within a year, you're meatless. That means we won't have to have 10 billion animals raised to slaughter for our meat consumption. We don't need that protein from meat. We get the amino acids from protein from beans and grains in the amount we need, not excessive. And also, when you take in more protein, what you need, the body can't store it, so you create toxic reactions on the kidneys and the liver. So therefore, we're diseasing our liver in particular. In fact, we have a non-alcoholic fatty liver because of high protein diets, because of taking more protein, what we need, and especially from animal sources that also give us arachidonic acid, which attacks our joints as well. So we could do a lot to help lessen methane, lessen global warming, just by going meatless. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to take a break. Come back for our guests. Please stay with us.
I'm not gonna let
like to welcome all of you to our program. I'm Gary Knoll. Now we're going to our newsmaker segment within our program, and my guest standing by is Greg Palast. Greg is a journalist with the BBC and the British newspaper The Guardian, who has been called by the Tribune in the UK as the most important investigative journalist in our time. He's won many awards, including the Financial Times, National Press Club, and the George Orwell Courage in Journalism Award. And he's a major muckraker, major investigator, and he is also the author of Vultures, Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum, Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores, which traverses much of the world to uncover the corruption in the oil and nuclear industries. And he's here with us now. Nice to have you with us today, Craig.
Yep, I'm thrilled to be back.
Greg, let's take a look at the major media and the stories they're not covering and why you believe they're not covering them. Let me give you two examples.
Okay.
This is from Chris Hellman and Manetta Kramer from Tom's Dispatch. War pay, the nearly $1 trillion national security budget. I'll just quote a paragraph here. Recent months have seen a flurry of headlines about cuts, often called threats to the U.S. defense budget. Last week, lawmakers in the House of Representatives even passed a bill that was meant to spare national security spending from future cuts by reducing school lunch funding and social programs. Again, let me repeat that. They are cutting school lunch programs and other social programs so they don't have to give a penny out of the pocket of the military-industrial spy complex. Here, then, is a simple question that, for some curious reason, no one bothers the media to ask, let alone answer. How much are we spending on national security these days? With major wars winding down, has Washington already cut such spending so close to the bone that further reductions would be perilous to our safety? In fact, we projected cuts added in to the national security budget for this year will be $1 trillion. Staggering sum, and yet that's how much we're giving to the military this year. $1 trillion. Now, Greg, here's a major story. On the one hand, this breaks down where this $1 trillion goes. It's actually $1.4 trillion, but let's just, for the argument's sake, say $1 trillion. At the very time that they're looking to pare back money out of social programs, meaning those who are poor will be poor, those who have some social assistance will get less or none, yet this isn't a story that they're touching at all. Why wouldn't they touch this? Now, 1 second, because I'm going to give you another one also. This is from John Rappaport, and it says the following. The FDA is a rogue criminal agency. I'll just quote a paragraph. The day the smoking gun has arrived, the discovery of a page on the FDA's own website proves the FDA is fully aware of that. The drugs it certifies as safe have been killing Americans at the rate of 100,000 per year. The FDA website page is currently available under the heading, Why Learn About Adverse Drug Reactions, and it can be Googled. The implications of this smoking gun are hard to grasp, if any rational way. The FDA takes no blame, no responsibility for its actions, and yet it admits the death statistics are accurate. As an investigative reporter, I have tracked and written about pharmaceutically caused death for 10 years. I have on numerous occasions cited Dr. Barbara Starfield's report in the Journal of the American Medical Association, which in which she presents the figures of 106,000 deaths per year in America as a result of these FDA-approved drugs. I have claimed that the federal government and, in particular, the FDA are aware of these numbers. Why isn't anyone in the media covering it? Why aren't we discussing it? When you kill 100,000-plus Americans each year by something that doesn't have to cause their death, that should be a news story. Could you take on those two and tell us your perspective, having been in the media, why we're not touching these?
Well, first of all, my media does touch it. I work with British television and The Guardian papers, and I was, in fact, putting together a film on American war toys called Marines in a Tube. Because you should understand what it is we are spending those trillions on. I mean, we could have a philosophical discussion about whether, you know, how we should defend ourselves. But I can tell you this, that what we're spending it on, for example, what I call the Marines in a Tube project, we have something called the Virginia-class submarine, which was meant to attack Soviet submarines. There aren't any more Soviet submarines. So rather than take this program in which we spend $2.5 billion a boat, they've turned it into a into a terrorism fighting vehicle. They have this $2.5 billion submarine, and I can't make this up. They literally have hollowed out the torpedoes where they can put 9 Marines inside, because these are gigantic nuclear torpedoes, 9 Marines inside, and shoot them to the beach. And that's how we're going to, it's got a commando injector. I mean, I'm only laughing because it's so ridiculously tragic and insane, but I can't make this stuff up. And I even was able to get from Lockheed and the Defense Department pictures of the Marines in the tube. And that's, we're literally spending $2.5 billion per boat. And yes, yeah, they're cutting it back from like 36 boats to 18. But, you know, you do the math there and you're up at $40-50 billion for a marine injector. And then we have something called the Expeditionary Fighting Vehicle, you know, which could get up to $100 billion. It's just, the numbers are unbelievable. Talk about school lunch. We could take every kid to Lutece for lunch in America. And the Expeditionary Fighting Vehicle is for beach landings, you know, like D-Day landings. And as one of our general has noted, that no one alive today remembers an opposed American beach landing. It had, you know, since like Incheon 60 years ago. We don't hit the beaches anymore in these boats, you know, like the LST. It's not Saving Sergeant Ryan. And yet we're, for a war that will never happen, does not happen, can never happen, we're spending $100 billion for beach landing craft when we don't land on the beaches anymore. And, you know, so this is what the Republican Congress, with a lot of Democrats, because as soon as you get into someone's district with a project, they'll vote for anything. That's what we're spending it on.
So that's what this all comes down to, protecting the power that a person has accumulated, and the media the same?
Yeah, and the thing is, why aren't we covering it here? Is that, well, first of all, like NBC, it's owned by GE, the big defense contractor, and no one actually says at GE, because I was with Seymour Hersh at the Columbia University Journalism School at a panel, we were talking about this. No one from NBC, GE calls up NBC and says, hey, don't run a story on this, on the war toys and the military expenditures. They just know that ain't a career maker. No one has to say anything. No one has to say anything. They just have to show examples of people like me who do take on the story, or Seymour Hersh. You know, as a Pulitzer Prize, he was fired by the New York Times. I can't get a job in the U.S. So-called mainstream, even though I'm, you know, with the top nightly news program in the world in English, BBC Nightly News. I can't report in the U.S. So you basically know what's a career maker and what's a career destroyer. And anything that goes after these corporate powers is a big, big problem. And now they even have they have something called the Military Channel, which is basically military killing hardware infomercials. So you have kind of a killer channel, how to kill channel. You know, and it makes a lot of money. There ain't no peace channel.
I appreciate your insights on this. Greg, one last question.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that we are not in this country, in the media, having substantial debate over the framework of suppressing information and a public opinion, that we've actually created a whole police state that if you stand up and protest legitimately, peacefully, you're now considered no better than a terrorist. If you go onto an animal farm and find abuses to the animals, you're the terrorist, not the person perpetrating the animal abuse. That everywhere you look, if you write an email, Google is, and I'm going to do a whole expose on Google, it is complicit with the Homeland Security state. That we have 900,000 people working to monitor Americans, and yet there doesn't seem to be any discussion as if they touch on this topic. Oh, you're one of those conspiratorialists, when it's all out there and clean, you know, right in front of us. It's not hidden. They don't have to hide it anymore.
Well, you know, one of our great billionaires, the great American somehow from Australia, Rupert Murdoch, we're not going to discuss media control. control because the media controls the discussion of media control. You have to understand until Jonathan Powell, Colin Powell's son, took over the head of the FCC, there were some limits on how many radio stations, how many TV stations, how many newspapers you could own in one market and nationwide. And instead, those restrictions were lifted under the Bush administration. Obama's not going to touch it. Clinton also raised some of the restrictions, so both parties are in on this game, and they got rewarded well with donations. And so the monopolization of the discussion has continued without cease. And it's, as you say, it's now this kind of monopolizing poison is moving to the Internet. I mean, I have to even say something like something as sacred as Wikipedia. Go and look in Wikipedia under British Petroleum, under Barrick Gold. I did an investigative story which went worldwide about how this is a gold mining company that George Bush Sr. was on the board of. And it was about miners buried alive when their mines were sealed up. They weren't given a chance to get out. The mines were sealed up by a company so they could sell this property to George Bush's gold mining company. International story, there's not one mention of it at all in Wikipedia. You go to British Petroleum, you go to any of the big corporate, go to Monsanto, go to Pfizer, and see how much dissenting material that isn't glowing PR crap is there. So they're moving into our sources that we take as like, well, yeah, Wikipedia, everyone's using it as a source now.
I don't. Long ago, I saw that they had been. In fact, I sued Wikipedia because I saw that any time anyone in the health field made any challenge against the Quackbusters, immediately that was taken away. In seconds, it was taken down, no matter how valid your information and sources. But anything that attacked anyone, denigrated, libeled people within the health movement was put up there and kept up there.
That's right. So basically, and they put out these pleas. It's a not-for-profit organization.
Oh,
the hell
forget
it is.
It.
The hell it is. It's a big money monster which pretends to be open source. It isn't. And that's the biggest new evil. It's the pretense that the Internet is not controlled. There's still untamed areas of the Internet, thank God for you and I. But I got to tell you, they are quickly shutting it down. Google, there's no question that you end up with these purveyors who are willing also to give in to such things as the Chinese dictatorship because the censorship is now, instead of using the Internet to break censorship, which is the myth, censorship is coming back across. Because they'll say, well, we can't have this here because they can read it in China. I can't put something on my site because it'll be read in the United Kingdom and I will be sued. I've been threatened for putting things on a U.S. site. I've been threatened with lawsuits in Britain under their horrible libel laws. So we are internationalizing censorship. And I'm very glad that you have noticed and taken action. And I want people to be, on Wikipedia, on Google, and the rest, that they are becoming, that basically the corporations have droves of full-time people who do nothing but scour the Internet and get the information off and get the propaganda on. And this is a horrible, dangerous new trend, and I hope we can stop it.
Well, we can by making people aware of it. Greg, thank you for being on. I appreciate all the good work you're doing. We look forward to seeing you on here again soon.
Great. Thanks for your work, Gary. Bye.
Greg Palast, my guest. And in our newsmaker segment. Now, this is a call out to all the psychiatrists, those people who pretend that they're actually scientists. They're not. This is from Mike Bundrant from Natural News. Give your psychiatrist a diagnosis of his own. 6 disorders to choose from. Well, given the controversy over the legitimacy of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual used by psychiatric diagnosis, I thought it'd be nice to clear things up by submitting a little revised list. I don't think it'll make it in the new DSM, but here it is. CRD, compassion repression disorder. Symptoms, when a doc is in the presence of a human suffering, he pretends nothing is happening. He could be watching a chess match for all we know. When a patient reaches emotional extremes, such as an extraordinarily depressed people, he realizes it's time to initiate electroconvulsive therapy and send electric shocks through her brain, possibly wiping out much of her memory. The doc is fine with this and proceeds to go on for a sandwich. How about GNTFY? Got no time for you syndrome. Symptoms, due to concerns about making his yacht payment and country club dues, the doc obsessively packs in 4 to 5 patients every hour. When you ask a question that takes more than 7.5 seconds to answer, the doc quickly regurgitates several medical terms, hands you a brochure, and dashes for the door. How about PCSD disorder, pervasive communication skill disorder? Symptoms, when the doctor holds sensitive information and needs to break the news to the patient, he hits the patient over the head with it in the most dismissive way possible. If the patient has cancer, for example, the doc might say, "You have cancer. We can't operate. You're going home to die. The exit is to the left on your way down the hall, and pay your bill." In less severe cases, such as delivering inconclusive test results, most likely from inadequately testing methods, or not knowing what to look for to a patient who had hopes of finding the cause of symptom, the doctor takes a more compassionate route, saying, "The results are negative. I guess it really is all about your head." Or I am God syndrome, also known as power trip simplex. Symptoms, the doc behaves as if he were all-powerful, all-knowing, and when confronted with the truth that he is just guessing most of the time and that there are a variety of effective alternative ways to heal from mental and emotional issues, he recoils in righteous indignation. Compulsive prescription writing disorder. Due to repressed feelings of inadequacy and improper toilet training methods used by his parents, the poor doctor compensates by compulsively reaching for the prescription pad every time he hears a symptom. He can't tolerate messes, and when patients' lives are a bit messy, he has to clean it up as quickly as possible with a prescription. And finally, big pharma dependency disorder. The symptoms, the doc displays little or no ability to actually help people and has no interest in human nature whatsoever. So he is 100% dependent upon the pharmaceutical industry to tell him what to do with his patients. Aside from studying which medications match which symptoms, which he can do in under 12 minutes, the doctor has no skills. Poor communication skills, no compassion, little interest in the emotional causes of problems, no taste for nutritional therapy, nothing. There really isn't much there, folks. This guy is a pill pusher, and that's about it. I guess we should show some compassion of our own. After all, once a doc gets a little taste of how easy and lucrative it is to prescribe a pill, he gets sucked right in. Before you know it, he's hooked on the easy money. He doesn't have a medical practice that seeks to solve deep problems at the heart of the human condition. He isn't connected with people in their suffering and helping them work out their emotional problems. He is no teacher or mentor. He is a pill pusher caught up in the drug cartel's deadly games. And worst of all, now it is too late. You see, he's got overhead, bills. Actually helping people takes time he no longer has. You have to get to know people. You need to contemplate their circumstances in life. You can't do that in 5 minutes. So, that's a fairly interesting overview of the psychiatric field. Wait till they see the new documentary I have coming out on psychiatry. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break. Come back with your insights on what Greg Pallas and I just discussed, and also some of the other things why the media won't touch important stories and continuously, almost to a point of over dominance of a single theme, just keep peppering us every day with the same useless information. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Coming back with some comments on college as well and your calls. And Luann Panessi, please stay with us. music for the Gibb brother who just died. Lots of evenings enjoying the wonderful music of the 70s and 80s they gave us. Now, I'm Gary Noll. We're going to go to your calls here in a moment, but we have Luann Panessi on the line. And before we go to Luann, which we're going to do in about a minute here, let me mention that since the second mention, about 2 minutes one day, 3 minutes another day, we have been completely sold out, all 1,000 seats at the Ethical Culture Center for this big event happening. However, and I mentioned one other time, but we had a person who was out that day, and no one knew that he was counting all of it, and they were only counting their own. That's why I offered it one more time. So that's why I haven't mentioned it at all. But what we have done, we've been calling people on your behalf and saying, look, are you really, really coming? And if you're not, how about surrendering your seat, because there are a lot of people who want to come, and we're sold out. We have 5 seats that have become available. That's it. 5 people that we called, thank goodness we did, said they can come. Here's what's happening. On Friday, June 15th at 7 p.m. at the Ethical Culture Center, New York City, we will be premiering the world premiere of my newest, hardest-hitting film ever. It's about the power of tyranny. It is about governmental agencies out of control. It is about taking away our freedoms of choice. It is about police raids and SWAT teams. It's about we waking up within 6 months to a year from now and having no freedom of choice. It's that serious. That's why I made this so important, put my energy into it, been filming it quietly for over 2 years. It's now done. It's come back from reviewers and vetters. It's ready. Joining me right after the showing will be a whole panel of people in their fields, and I'm not going to mention who they are or what we're going to talk about, but it will be a mind-bending evening that will be meant to empower you to start taking strong action. Letter-writing campaigns will have all that you need to protect your freedom of choice, but also you will not have seen a film like this before that takes you inside with whistleblowers and insiders of how corrupt a governmental agency can be. If you want to join me for this one evening in this world premiere, call this number. We only have 5 seats. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. And then I will be there. And it'll be a worldwide premiere all over the world. Now, let's go ahead and say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann. You're on.
Hello, Gary. An incredible piece on psychiatry there. That was a riot. But unfortunately, it's more ironic than anything, because that's exactly what many of them do. I have a couple of emails here. One is... we have a woman from Cleveland. She says she's retired, and she was a research analyst for an investment firm. And now in her spare time, she does her own research as a hobby. And she writes, were you aware that in 1 year you were holding several national, state, and world records? And she asked if you knew how many records that you hold. Do you know?
I have no idea. I have no
idea. When you look at your whole lifespan of the records that they have on your track and field, you're holding 47 records at various competitions for various age divisions. That's amazing. You're holding 47 records. And
didn't know that.
She also mentions that... what was significant to her was the fact that her husband passed away after he was retired for only 2 years. And she really feels it had to do with the fact that he had nothing to aspire to. And when she looks at you and how many years you've been in sports and doing all the other things that you're doing, she asks if you could speak about how you really keep the passion in your life, so that you don't end up sitting around saying, what do I do now, when you reach any certain age?
Well, first and foremost, I don't believe that we start the day healthy or wise or spiritual. I don't believe in that concept at all. Instead, I believe that we start the day with a clean slate, and what we choose with our thoughts and then manifest as our actions allow us to imprint our character upon that day. Wasn't it Eric Hoffer, the great therapist, who says, "It is thus with most of us. We are what other people say we are. We know ourselves chiefly by hearsay." I don't want that to be how I live my life. I don't want to be living to everyone else's expectations and forget what my own ideals are. And because frequently there's a clash between the two. So if I want to be healthy today, then today, not yesterday, not last year, I have to make healthy choices today. If I want to be spiritual, then I have to seek a way today to go out of my way and to see that other people's needs, without any thought of being rewarded or thanked, you do it because it honors your spirituality today. Not think back, when was the last time I did something for someone else without asking something in return, without a quid pro quo? So that means that every day you have to reaffirm the right of your brain to be creative, the right of your intellect to be probing, the right of your spirit to be compassionate, the right of your physical being to be in synchronicity with the highest levels of health consciousness. That is a day-to-day process. So it begins this morning when we arise, it ends when we go to sleep, and you start all over again the next day. So it doesn't matter what we've done in the past that's right or wrong, it matters what we do that's right today. Because if we don't do what's right today, we will do what was wrong. There's no neutral. And so that's why I believe a lot of people retire, a lot of people stop, or a lot of people need someone to give them a reason to be alive. And if someone else to give you a reason to be alive, a reason to get out of bed, a reason to be motivated, a reason to be kind, a reason, you know, to vote for a third party candidate instead of the stupidity of the two parties we have, then that's not going to work. Because what happens when someone's not there? We have to get to this point where we are self-motivating, self-actualizing, and then seek other people to work in harmony with so that we can get something good coming from all that we have done. Hope that answers that.
Sure. I also have something else here from someone who worked at General Media, which is a major magazine company, Penthouse, Omni, things like that. And Bob Guccione, who was their guy who owned it, yeah. She said that he was earning over $2 million a month. And she says that you had 60 cover stories that you wrote for their publishing company. But you stopped 10 years ago. And she wants to know, why did you stop writing articles for them 10 years ago? And she mentions here that it was soon after, about 10 years ago, he lost everything. And he had over 700 employees, and not one of them tried to help him. And she feels that it was because when he was in power, he pretty much excluded everyone from benefiting from his riches. And she wants to get your take on this and why you stopped writing.
I wrote for a quarter of a century, for 25 years. I don't know the number. I knew of about 58 different cover stories. I wrote for him instead of Playboy and other magazines because he had the courage to go out there and allow me to take on the toughest people in the world, biggest corporations, and never once back down. He also agreed that anyone who wouldn't buy his magazine could still have the article free. And it wasn't that he made $2 million a month. He gave 2 million free reprints. I know of just the chiropractic article I did, two parts. There was about 3 million reprints of that. He had an enormous compassion heart, and it was fearless of going after corruption. But he removed himself from his company. He lived in a beautiful place over on the east side. He rarely went to his company. And Bob didn't make a lot of friends. Bob was an outsider who stayed an outsider. And he was a very quiet person, very soft-spoken person. But the day came when the inner management of the company wanted me to work with a person who I looked in their background, and it was a bad background. I said, no, I write my own stories, do my own research. I'm not going to have anyone else working with me. And they said, well, that's the way it is. And I said, then this, goodbye. That was the last time I ever wrote an article for Penthouse. But the good news is I've chosen not to write for any other magazine. Instead, I prefer to write and put articles up on the website because, A, I can do it much more quickly, because the lead time in many magazines is 3, 4, 5 months. When I write an article today, it can be up today on the website. One article last year that Richard Gell and I wrote together on exposing the fraud of the flu vaccine and the H1N1 vaccine went on 159,000 different blogs, including Times of India, USA Today, a lot of big ones. We guesstimate about 70 million people read that article. You could never get 7 million people, let alone 70 million people, to read an article in a major magazine. And it's there. And then other articles that came after that, they would be more likely to read. So I'm writing, I guess, about 15 articles a year now, every year. The magazines were nice, but they're not the future. Land-based stations are nice. They're not the future. The Internet's the future. And that's why I chose. And by the way, as it turns out, I was right. This person who, it was a plant, and it was probably a pharmaceutical company plant, wanting to plant someone in my office who would then supposedly fact-check, because historically they had lawyers that fact-checked everything I wrote. That's why I never had to correct a single sentence in all those articles written. They never were sued for anything. But this guy came from a dirty background, and it was clear that he wasn't placed there to look after the integrity of the information I was writing. He was there probably to put misinformation in, and that would have caused a problem. So I just ended it. That was it. Hope that answers your question.
Yes.
Okay, let's go over now and say hello to a couple people who've been standing by. George from Manhattan. Hi, George.
What do you wash? What do you use to wash your vegetables and fruits?
Okay, you can use a simple veggie wash. You spray it on, and then you rub it, agitate it, and then rinse it. Veggie wash. And let's say hello to Bill from Long Island. Hi, Bill.
Yes, hi, Gary. How you doing?
Good.
Good. Listen, very apropos to what you were talking about just before with reference to the psychiatrists being
yes.
pill pushers.
That's all they are.
It's not just psychiatrists. Yesterday I visited an internist, and I went to him because he's part of a group, and he's an osteopath, thinking that, you know, maybe he would be more holistic. Sure enough, he spent probably 95% of the visit trying to talk me into 4 different drugs. Now, I'm 54 years old, will be 55 soon. I don't take any drugs. Had I taken him up on his recommendations, I would have walked out of his office with 4 different drugs. And sure enough, as I'm walking out, who's standing in the front at the receptionist? A drug salesman.
You know the game. You know how it's played. Did you ever watch the film Prescription for Disaster or Death by Medicine, either one?
Yes, I did. I attended your evening in the city.
Then you know what it's really about. All right? It's all about we are commodities. Our body is a commodity. It can be manipulated. It can be used. As long as we agree to go along with what they say is the right path. Well, the right path in psychiatry is to recognize that psychiatry is not a healing science, nor is it a legitimate medical science. And where do you see the undercover photography we did? Where do you see 12 separate psychiatrists, 12 of the biggest names in America, right, top people, taking a completely normal, healthy woman in, a 35-year-old woman, sitting her down, and within 10 minutes diagnosed with a mental condition and given prescription. Later, when confronted on the street, completely... relaxed about it. Hey, you know, it's a subjective. Well, you didn't say it was subjective. You said it was bipolar. How can you say that a symptom of feeling bad after a dog dies is bipolar?
Right. And Gary, the amazing thing is, I spoke to the doctor for a while trying to find out about his background, his training. He was totally unembarrassed about saying that during his training, the drug companies had tremendous influence on a daily basis on all the students. So they don't have a chance.
That's correct. When you go in, if you're not aware of how the game is rigged, you will be a high-level participant in it, and you can be a victim of it. That's why we're doing the programs we're doing. If we have to mock it, we'll mock it. If we have to expose it, we'll expose it. But we're going to talk about it, and at least on the forums and the media that we have available to us. And thank you very much. And let's say one quick word over to, let's say, Abdul from New Jersey. Hi, Abdul. Oh, not there now? Okay, sorry. Then we're out of time. Took all the calls we could. I thank you all for listening. I appreciate it. By the way, last night's discussion on Progressive Commentary Hour with two of the brightest economists in the world, and boy, did they paint a negative picture. Whoa. But did so calmly and methodically. And how I look at it when it was finished, I'm sitting there thinking, my God, you know, bad news is sometimes real hard to take, that we're going into a really dark depression, worse than anything we've had, and why, and who's behind it, why it won't change. But it's also, yes, we can, individually, we can get out of it. We don't have to participate in it, and there's a lot we can do. But it was more a discussion for the masses of people who are going to go right ahead watching television, believing in their little demagogues like Bill O'Reilly on television, and not doing anything to stop this madness. But people can download that show. Even bad news can be good information if we choose to turn our lives, make better choices because of it. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you very much for listening.